Let me run this by my lawyer is a really helpful phrase to have in your back pocket. Legal Shield has been giving legal peace of mind for over 50 years. They connect you to a vetted law firm in your state for an affordable monthly fee. Want an experienced set of eyes on a contract's fine print, or you finally want to get that will done? Legal Shield has a dedicated group of lawyers who have your back, no matter what the future brings. Sign up today at LegalShield.com/iHeart. PPLSI does not provide legal representation or advice. See a plan for complete terms.
When you buy Kroger brand products, you feel like you're winning. That's because they offer proven quality at lower than low prices. In fact, we guarantee that you and your family will love how Kroger brand products taste, or you get your money back. So next time you're shopping for the family, look for delicious Kroger brand products, because they'll make you all feel like you're winning. Shop now, in-store, or online. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
Open a limited-time 11-month certificate at Kemba Financial Credit Union. At 5.25% APY, it's more than triple the national average, plus it's a safe and secure way to grow your money. Visit your local branch or kemba.org/cd for details. Offer expires May 31st, 2024. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. $500 minimum and $250,000 maximum deposit. Advantage status required. Comparison based on bank rate average. Federally insured by NCUA.
Live Nation presents Concert Week. Now through May 14th, get $25 tickets to over 5,000 shows. That's up to 75% off a summer full of your favorite artists like 21 Savage, Alanis Morissette, Cage the Elephant, Celeste Barber, Dierks Bentley, Fade, Hootie and the Blowfish, Janet Jackson, Kidz Bop Kids, Meghan Trainor, Pistol Puma, Sarah McLachlan. Get tickets to more than 5,000 summer shows for just $25. Until now through May 14th. Visit LiveNation.com/Concert Week to learn more and plan your summer with Sean Paul, Sum 41, 30 Seconds to Mars, oh, and Two Door Cinema Club.
We are on from 1 to 4 every day. And after 4 o'clock, you can hear us on the iHeartRadio app, the entire show. Just go to the app, go to podcasts, and it's called John and Ken On Demand. And that's how you demand it, and then you can listen to it.
Tomorrow, the Moist Line comes back to KFI. Lots of openings because it's a slow start to the new year, and we were off a couple of weeks there, so leave your messages using the iHeartRadio app, the microphone icon. Call that toll-free number, 1-877-MOIST-86, 1-877-664-7886. And another keyword. At 3:20, you will get a keyword which you enter at the website for a chance at $1,000. Well, big news today concerning the murders of the four college students in Idaho. The man accused of that attack, Brian Koberger, the 28-year-old grad student from the state of Washington who just lived across the border from Moscow, Idaho. And he made his first court appearance, four murder charges, one count of burglary, and court documents have been revealed, the affidavits concerning what they have on Koberger to charge him in this case. Alex Stone, ABC News for KFI, can fill us in on all the crazy details.
Alex, what's up?
Hey there, guys. Yeah, 18 pages here in front of me, and interesting stuff in all of this. First of all, the court appearance today, though, yeah, he's a tall, lanky dude and real thin shoulders, barely filling the jail uniform, big words, prisoner on his back. But he looked really confident in court today, almost like he was sitting in a class listening to professor. And his friends had been saying that this is a guy who has, for quite a while, going back to high school, been really into serial killers and the mind of a killer. We know he applied to be in the Pullman, Washington, to intern at the Pullman, Washington Police Department a couple of months ago, had put up an online poll about the psychological aspects of somebody going to commit a crime. But it seemed like he was really into it and interested in everything that the judge was saying. So she read the charges against him, four counts of murder, one count of burglary. She laid out what it could mean for him, could mean the death penalty if he's convicted. And he told the judge he understands all that, saying this as he leaned up to the mic and no emotion at all, told her, yep, he understands.
The maximum penalty for this offense, if you were to plead guilty or be found guilty, is death or imprisonment for life. Do you understand?
Yes.
Yes, he understands. Families of the victims, they were in court today. They look like, and you can understand, they wanted to jump out of their seats and strangle him, and they were staring at him. He never gave them the eye contact that it seemed that they wanted to be able to make that eye contact.
Psychopaths aren't going to do that.
Yeah. Well, and they, you got to love this part, that the sheriff tells us that Koberger has told them he only wants food in jail, cooked in pans that have never touched meat. And the sheriff pretty much said, look, you know, we've had vegetarians in the jail before. We'll take care of that. But promising you that we're going to go out and buy all new pans for you, no, that's not going to go on.
What are you going to do about it?
Yeah, and apparently, you know, you can only not eat for so long, so we'll see what he's going to do. So this affidavit, going through it, the probable cause affidavit, we know cell phone records show that he was apparently watching or stalking the home for quite a while, that he had been by there 12 times in the months before the murders. Now, it goes back to last summer. What's unclear is if these occupants, students, were renting it at that time before the school year, which may lead, remember a couple of weeks ago when the prosecutor said, well, maybe the killer was targeting the home and not the people in the home, and we all went, what? And that may be why. We don't know when they moved in, but that apparently back to August, he was even pulled over one time before that he was doing this, but pulled over in August, leaving the home, the area of the home. And it was a regular traffic stop. He went on his way, but they knew he had been in the area that way. We know from the cell phone pings that at 9:12 the morning of the murders, he went back to the home. The murders were at about 4 in the morning. Why? We don't know. But maybe it was to check if anybody had discovered his alleged work. They had not. It wasn't until noon that day.
Wait a second. He went back at 9 in the morning?
He went back at 9:12 in the morning.
This is 3 hours before
police knew.
Police were called, yeah.
And
wow.
Did something. You know, did he park out there, just drive by to see if police were there, but went back? We know that at least one of the surviving roommates was not asleep. It was assumed that they both slept through it. She told police that she heard the sound of crying at around 4 in the morning, that she heard a voice in the house say, there's someone here. Then a male voice say, it's okay, I'm going to help you. Apparently the killer saying that. There was a thump that was heard. Then she looked out her bedroom door, saw a figure dressed all in black and a mask, she told police, going down the hall toward their sliding glass door, and that he left in that moment. She could only see bushy eyebrows. He has bushy eyebrows.
All right, but this is at 4 in the morning.
She told police that she locked herself in a room and froze. Now, we don't know.
For 8 hours? Until
yeah.
Until
that's,
somebody
called still, it's not clear. She froze for 8 hours, called friends over close to noon, and then they called 911. But that's not specified. Police have said, though, that the roommates are not suspects. They were not involved.
No, it probably wouldn't have changed anything because they were probably dead very, very quickly.
Yeah, but I mean, based on the wounds.
It's still strange.
But what about the other roommate? Nothing on the other roommate?
She the other roommate not mentioned in this, so probably was asleep 4 in the morning.
Oh, wow. Now, so he left something behind, though, right?
He did. The sheath of his knife was left next to one of the bodies right there next to it. And had a, it's leather, had a U.S. Marine Corps insignia on it. That is where they got the DNA. We didn't know where they had gotten the DNA. There was DNA on a button on there to remove the knife. But it was an unknown male DNA at that point. So they began working it for the last month and a half. Cell phone pings in the area. They found a white Elantra at the University of Washington matching it. They began looking at that, watching the car on video, where it was going that day. They narrowed in on him without the DNA all the way back to the end of November. Yeah, the police chief, James Fry, should get in Moscow an Oscar for acting like they had nothing this whole time.
Yes.
That they were narrowing in on him. And then last week in Pennsylvania, they went and they got trash out of the family's trash can outside of their home, ran DNA off of that. It came back as the father of Koberger, and they knew then that they had the right guy, and they moved in and made the arrest. So they were able to match the DNA from Pennsylvania out of the trash can to what they got in mid-November on scene from that sheath, and it closed out the case. But really, they used it only to confirm what they thought. They had cell phone pings all over the place. They had on video. They knew who they were looking for even before they moved in last week and got that DNA.
Motive, though. No motive yet?
No idea.
And did he have any connection to any of the victims? Did he meet them ever?
Yeah, with all the stalking, did he actually have a conversation with any of them?
Not that we know of. The family say they have no idea. Now, You know, did parents know what their kids are doing at college? Probably not, who they've been talking to. But they don't know who this guy is. It doesn't doesn't seem that he's talking to police. He may, you know, if he's going to go not guilty, he's probably not.
It almost seems like this was a dream he had. And, like, the confidence he showed in court today, he finally realized his dream. Like, he was in the big leagues. He actually did a mass murder the way he'd always planned to do it.
Yeah, but he got caught. Was that part of his plan?
Maybe he doesn't care.
Yeah, and leaving the sheath behind. I mean, otherwise, they didn't have DNA. They didn't have fingerprints. He did almost everything perfectly to get away. Except
maybe that's
for,
why he drove
that.
Back. He was trying to get that sheath, no?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, that may have been it. You know, 9 o'clock in the morning, go back and decided couldn't do it, maybe. Yeah, motive-wise, though, was it something about the home? Was it that he was infatuated with, you know, one of the victims, male or female? Had they wronged him? Had he perceived that in some way? There's nothing indicating any of that. Was this a serial killer fantasy? None of that is clear. One thing we do know, there was some reporting last night by an outlet based on a single source that those two traffic stops in Indiana were directed by the FBI so that they could get a look at him and look at his hands. The FBI and Indiana State Police say that's completely wrong. Those were organic, that you wouldn't put a single state trooper or a deputy, the first one was deputy, then a state trooper, walking up to a quadruple murderer without any backup, without any firepower, not even a hand on the gun, walking up to the car and just, you know, reaching in and saying you were following too closely. So it does not appear that Indiana stop, that had anything to do with all of this. That was totally organic and they pulled him over.
Is there a discussion as to whether he's killed other people?
They seem to be looking at that. I mean, you know, again, now that we know how much police knew without telling us, I'd take it with a grain of salt, but they say that they don't see any pattern there of these killings linked to a killer of anybody else in the area, but they got to be looking at it.
All right, thank you very much, Alex. Great report.
You got it. Thanks, guys.
Alex Stone, ABC News for KFI. Got a look at the affidavit against Brian Koberger. That's the man from Washington State who was accused of killing the four college students in the state of Idaho. We got a few more tidbits about that story, which are just really weird, including that one I had mentioned earlier, that Koberger's sister starred in a slasher movie where young people were stabbed to death. It was a few years ago, but you got to imagine that's part of the whole mix of this crazy case. Coming up next, the K-word, which you can use to possibly win $1,000. John and Ken, KFI, AM 640, live on the iHeartRadio app. I had a thought during the break that this Brian Koberger, who's the man that they believe murdered the four University of Idaho students, of course, he was a grad student studying criminal justice at the University of Washington. And we wondered, you know, the motive. And we said, well, you know, maybe he wanted to pull off a crime like this. He studied it for so long. It might be something he got obsessed with. But I blurted out, well, he got caught. Well, if he's got these people representing him who are saying things like he's eager to be exonerated. Does he think that the end game here that would make this perfect is he beats the case against him?
It might be.
Is he that wacky?
By the way,
another detail.
I saw that line and it stuck because saying he looks forward to being exonerated is different than saying I never killed them. I don't even know them. Like, wouldn't you be saying that? Imagine they came to your house, took you away, and said you killed these four college students. Like, what the hell are you talking about? Right? Wouldn't that be the reaction? Just you're incredulous, you're angry, you're crazy, you're saying, what, is this a hoax? Is this some kind of game? Instead, oh, I'm going to be exonerated, which is a weird word.
And another bit he tried to play, have you arrested anybody else yet?
Yeah.
He said that after they nabbed him.
Yeah.
He did something else, which, you know, comes out of the playbook. It looks like 5 days after the murders, he changed his license plates. They were Pennsylvania plates, registered where his parents live. It's a 2015 Hyundai Elantra, and he changed them to the state of Washington. Some believe that since he used his own car, and that was key, right, when they finally found video with the white Hyundai Elantra that they were looking for, he realized that could be a problem, so he changed the license plates to see if that could throw people off.
I wonder if the driving force was, because he seemed like he was caught up in the whole process, right? The process of understanding how investigations work.
Yes.
How evidence is analyzed. You know, the procedure to actually kill and get away. Like, almost like this was his life's work. He was going to see if he could pull it off. Why he picked them, maybe there is no particular reason.
Well, he didn't live far away, and he probably noticed it was a big party house, and that's what we're talking about with Alex Stone, that they originally said words like maybe the house was targeted. That could be true. He just realized, well, there's a crazy place with a lot of wild young people. I might be able to slip in there and kill some people.
Yeah. And he'd have resentment against people.
Why those four and not the other two is another thing I don't understand, right? He only killed four out of six people living in the house.
Yeah, I don't know.
He has a sister by the name of Amanda Koberger. She appeared as a character named Lori in a 2011 movie called 2 Days Back. It's a group of young students who go hiking in the remote woods, and they are stabbed to death by a maniacal killer who had won their trust. That's kind of creepy too, isn't it?
It is. And that's, there's some psychological component there.
Yeah. The 2 days back director told the Washington, rather the New York Post, "You're bleeping kidding me. Her brother's that guy? Damn, man. Holy cow." That's a good quote.
Well, I mean, he's been troubled his entire life. The bullying goes back to elementary school. The heroin addiction in high school. Excessive weight. Leading into high school. Then suddenly he's rail thin, almost emaciated. I mean, all that are symptoms of mental disorders, obsessions, extreme behavior.
That apparently he's pretty bright. He got himself into a PhD program. He's studying criminal justice and criminology. I guess this all came together in one mush of maybe I'm going to kill people and see if I can get away with it, or it would just be fascinating to see how they investigate or maybe catch me, and then maybe I can beat the charges. All of this could be swirling through the crazy brain.
Because I read a few books on serial killers, and one of the things I remember is often the pressure to commit the act builds up and builds up. It makes you crazy. It's an obsession. You can't turn it off. You can't stop thinking about it. And then when you finally do the killing, there's a sense of immense relief, like, okay.
You're right.
And then it starts building up again, and you have to satisfy it again. It's like a craving you might have for pizza or ice cream, right? Or a drink or a drug. It's like, I've got to have that feeling again, because can you imagine all the adrenaline that's pumping inside, all the chemicals that are released in the body when he's actually in the middle of the act? And then I want to feel that again. I want to feel the power.
Todos los días sales a chambear para ganarte dinero. Trabajas duro y con orgullo. Eres esencial para la economía de California. Y aún así, no siempre te alcanza. Pero hay ayuda. Presenta tus impuestos y reclama el CAL EITC. Ese es el crédito por ingreso del trabajo de California. Y podrías recibir un reembolso. ¡Es tu dinero! ¡Te lo has ganado! Averigua si calificas en CAL EITC el número 4ME.org.
Well, you're saying if they hadn't caught him, he might have tried to do this again.
Well, yeah, if he pulled it off, he probably would have been, he's just going to go back and become a criminologist at a county detective office in a cubicle.
All right, when we come back, we were waiting to see what's going on with the new mayor of Los Angeles, Karen Bass, and the homeless. And, of course, she's got this Inside Safe initiative. We're going to be talking to council member Tracy Park, who replaced Mike Bonner on the LA City Council. There's a story that she's teaming up with Bass to do something about a high-need encampment in Venice. John and Ken, KFI AM 640, live everywhere, the iHeartRadio app.
Now on live from 1 until 4. 1 until 4, and then after that, you go to the podcast, if you wish, at the iHeartRadio app, and click on podcasts. And it's John and Ken on Demand. That's the title of it. And you can listen anytime, day or night. The entire show.
The Daily Mail just posted the headline that you and I were just talking about. Why did the surviving roommate who came face-to-face with the killer wait 6 hours before calling 911? And why did he choose them as his victims? The questions unanswered in dramatic Idaho affidavit.
Well,
yeah, it's a weird one.
If you wanted to have dark thoughts, you'd say, she escaped death and she doesn't call for many hours?
Did she know him? Did she...
Yeah.
It's just very weird.
These are the openings that conspiracy theorists spend all day and night spreading online.
Yeah. Although she did make the statement to the police that she saw him, she could have just denied seeing him at all and just said, I slept all night, right?
I'm just saying it's these little oddities of people's behavior that gives...
This will set off a new round of conspiracy.
That's right. This gives the oxygen to the conspiracy crowd.
All right. Mayor Bass, of course, as soon as she took office, declared a state of emergency for Los Angeles over homelessness. And we're wondering what Inside Safe would lead to as far as actually getting people off the streets. Well, a story's popped up. It was announced yesterday that they are going to be targeting what they call high-need encampments. One of them is in Venice. That's in the council district of Tracy Park, who replaced Mike Bonin on the Los Angeles City Council. And we wanted to bring her on to talk about this because apparently they're teaming up to do something about encampments near the intersection of Sunset and Pacific Avenues.
Tracy, how are you?
Hey, guys. I'm good, thanks. How are you?
We're good. So what are you doing, or what is this program doing?
So this program is a partnership, in this case, between the CD11 Council Office and the Mayor's Office to bring the Mayor's Inside Safe initiative to Venice to address the encampment around the Venice Bridge home.
Oh, yes, because that brought a lot of homeless traffic into the neighborhood when Garcetti and Bonin opened that bridge home.
It did, and if you'll recall, there were numerous commitments and promises that were made to the local community in exchange for hosting that facility, including that it would be a special enforcement zone, that folks living in encampments in the area would be brought indoors, and that the area would be safe for the local community. And unfortunately, none of those promises were kept. And as a result, it has always been a day one priority for me to bring immediate attention and resources to that area so that I could keep the promises that our former council member broke.
So I think what is this about? A more comprehensive effort for people to go out there and talk to these people in this encampment around the bridge home and try to get them to go indoors somewhere? Is that what they're doing?
That's right. So we began the process on earlier this week. Mayor Bass and I personally walked the encampment and did outreach. And our partners and service providers have been out there all week doing outreach. We have so far successfully moved 22 individuals into interim housing. And this effort will go on for the next couple of weeks until we have cleared the entire encampment around the Venice Bridge home.
Can you describe what interim housing is?
Sure. So, you know, there's no question about the fact that we do not have an adequate supply of long-term permanent housing options currently online in the city. So interim housing can include a mix of different interventions such as hotel and motel rooms, shelters, shared housing, things that are not the permanent housing options, but our interim housing options that we are offering folks come with a commitment to secure long-term housing solutions as well.
Are you finding out what works when you reach out to these people? You said 22 have accepted some sort of interim housing, and I don't know how large the encampment is, but that sounds like at least a dent in the last couple of weeks. What does it take?
You know, really most folks want to get out of the conditions of living on the streets. And certainly with, you know, the weather having changed and things getting more and more dire by the day, we've seen a lot of people, you know, approaching us as we're out doing the outreach and saying, when can I go?
Was this not being done by the Garcetti-Bonin regime? This simply wasn't happening? No, they weren't being approached?
You know, there were a couple of encampment-to-home programs that were done in the district. We saw one out on Oceanfront Walk. We saw another one in Westchester Park. But they have never been done at the scale that was necessary to really quickly and compassionately get these folks moved into safe settings. And so I am very excited and encouraged by the mayor's leadership on this. I think for a long time, we have been waiting for someone to stand up and say, we're not going to kick the can down the road anymore, and I'm going to take the responsibility to get this done. And so I was very encouraged and pleased when the mayor offered to partner with me on this particular initiative in Venice that was a huge priority for me personally and for so many of us that have lived with this in Venice for so long.
What are you going to do with the resistors who say no to all the outreach?
Hoping that there aren't going to be any, but when this process is completed, the special enforcement zone around the Venice Bridge home will be going into effect. And that was something that was promised by the prior administration, but never adhered to.
And how's that executed?
So we are prepared to move forward with
right.
that.
Right. What are the rules on that? How's that going to be executed and by who?
So there are going to be regular cleanups in that area, and which is another thing that was promised. And we're not going to allow, tents up there during the day in that zone at all.
Well, how do you deal with, because sometimes hopefully these 22 people will stay in this interim housing on their way to more permanent housing. But we've hearing a lot over the last year or so, Tracy, that they don't like the rules. There's too many restrictions on wherever they're sheltered. They rebel against all this. I mean, how do you get around that problem?
So we are doing everything that we can to incentivize folks by making what we're offering something that works for them. So, for example, if someone living in the encampment has pets, we're going to ensure that they're going to a location where their pets are going to be welcome. If folks have questions or concerns about their personal property or belongings, we are going to be providing storage. And another really important piece that I'm proud of is that CD11 is going to be providing compassion teams to offer services to folks that are going into these interim settings. So whether that is addiction, recovery services, mental health counseling, job training and employment services, we're going to be providing the wraparound services that folks need for their long-term stabilization and recovery.
And do you have to prepare
them to stay housed.
Do you have the personnel and the money to keep doing follow-up on all the homeless people?
You know, it's a really good question and a fair one, you know, and of course not, to be honest. You know, there's never going to be enough resources available. That's one of the problems that the city has struggled with. But we, as you know, city leadership and under the direction of this mayor, are going to be making very significant investments in addressing this crisis. And that's going to come at the service provider levels. And I think you guys already know certainly where, you know, I stand on partnering with our public safety organizations here in the city of Los Angeles to ensure that our communities and our neighborhoods are safe and accessible for everyone.
Yeah, I mean, Tracy, I guess our concern here was, what is Mayor Bass going to do that Garcetti and his people didn't do for these last several years as this problem got worse? And you think she does have a better idea to really focus on this?
To take a look at her emergency declaration and the directives that she has issued, we are going to be cutting the red tape and the bureaucracy around getting affordable and permanent supportive housing interventions online. We are going to be scaling up interim housing solutions around. And she is bringing a drive and a determination to this process that I think has just been missing for far too long in our city. So I am encouraged by what I've seen so far. And, you know, we need her to succeed. And I look forward to being a partner with her in this effort.
All right. We'll keep talking with you because we're going to track this.
Yeah, we want to see how this works.
See how the follow through is and how it sustains. So thanks very much for coming on.
Always happy to chat with you guys. We'll talk again soon.
All right.
All right. That is Tracy Park. She's the new city council member for CD11, John Kobelts. Council
that replaced
was the district of Mike Bonin's Venice, the West Side. Yeah,
isn't it staggering that Garcetti simply did nothing all these years? I just can't get my mind around as to why you would sit and do nothing. He didn't even try. It's not like tried and failed. It's didn't show up to play. Why?
Well, we'll wait and see whether or not this new mayor can make a dent in this homeless problem. More coming up, John and Ken, KFI, AM 640, live everywhere on the iHeartRadio app.
I'm just going to read two headlines.
All right.
Number one, Prince Harry speaks candidly about his penis after endless fascination.
That's a good headline.
Headline number two.
I click that one.
Headline number two, Prince Harry had a frostbitten penis at Prince William and Kate Middleton's wedding.
Okay. A lot about the penis.
A lot about the penis.
I thought the royal family was supposed to be, you know, above all this sordid, detailed.
I don't think they are.
All right.
I do have to read the story later to find out how it got frostbitten.
Sure. You do that. Fill us in.
I want to learn and protect myself.
The Moist Line is coming back tomorrow. Here's your last heads up. If you want to leave a message, there's a lot of openings. Use the iHeartRadio app. That's the microphone icon to leave a message. Call the toll-free number, 1-877-MOIST-86, 1-877-664-7886. Those calls will play during this hour.
You want the answer?
Tomorrow.
Sure. He took a 200-mile Arctic charity walk.
And that caused his penis to be frostbit.
Yes.
Okay.
So don't do that.
For those of DeMar Hamlin, the Buffalo Bills safety, apparently is in better shape, and they don't believe there's any neurological damage after he suffered cardiac arrest during the Monday night football game. The NFL has finally made a decision on that game. It will not be played. It will not be resumed. What they're going to do about all the playoff seedings, because there'll be two teams who have played 16 games versus the others who have played 17, we don't know yet. But that's your update from
NFL. Did you see what the first thing he asked?
No, I did not.
He wasn't speaking, but he could write on paper.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. What did he say?
The first message he wrote is, who won the game?
Oh,
yeah.
Wow. Well, that shows you he's still all there.
Yeah.
He was really concerned about his team, right?
He blacked out and figured the game went on without him.
Yeah, it was the first quarter. It was only 7-3, right, so there's a lot of football left.
Probably figured he'd gotten into a concussion play and didn't remember it. Knowing that it was this
didn't
heart.
He was out for a few days.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, exactly right. All right.
Conway's here.
Hey now. We got Blake Trolley out at the Duarte Fish Fire Burn Scar area. You know,
what is that? The fish fire burn scar?
Yeah, in Duarte. That's where the 210 and the 605
meet. Fish fire.
Yeah, fish. I don't know why they call it fish
fire.
It's
like one of those table games. You throw five random words together. Can you make a sentence out of it?
But you know what's weird is, like, you got attacked by this storm. We got attacked in Burbank. But I know a lot of people that didn't see anything. No rain, nothing.
Where did they live?
Arizona?
Oh, no. I mean, one of them was Torrance, got very light.
Really?
Yeah. Another one in the Santa Clarita area didn't get much.
There was heavy pummeling rain overnight.
We got worked. We had a big, huge tree down the block. Yeah. Like a 70-year-old oak tree that went down.
Three trees.
Yeah. It was wild, man. Yeah. Unbelievable storm. Then we also have Alex Stone coming on with us, talk about the murders, and Brian Colbert. We'll talk about that. And then Dean Sharp is coming on, and we'll talk to him about rain and flooding, and he also has predictions and trends for 2023. Plus, do you guys like the National Football League?
It comes up every now and then.
Yes,
you do.
Yes.
Okay. Well, then, according to Joy Behar, you're a white conservative. Only white.
Oh, I heard something.
Only white conservative males.
Ignore the view and all of that.
Really? But black guys don't watch the NFL?
I asked Mo Kelly. He's already here, which makes me look horrible, right? That he's already prepping his show and
oh,
I'm.
Oh my God!
You walk in at like 10:02.
Oh my God!
Right?
Your prep time is about 5 minutes.
My prep time was when you guys signed off. I got in the car, but I said Mo, you like the NFL? He goes, yeah. I go, then you're a white conservative. And he goes, I've been called worse.
Typical.
That's wild, man. And then we have this thing called a Google AI chat bot. And you can just plug in a couple of pieces of information, and it writes an entire letter for you and sticks a joke in at the end.
Is that right?
And it's unbelievably accurate.
Can you talk to it as a friend? Will it talk back to you?
It won't, but...
That's what I'm waiting for. Then I don't have to speak with anyone anymore.
Yeah, well, John's friends are bots.
I'll just talk to my chat bot.
But it's incredibly... I mean, we just stuck in four or five pieces of information. Aaron did out there in the news editor. And man, it wrote a three-paragraph letter that was exact on everything.
That's going to be the news department in about a week.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
Nailed it.
Yeah, right. You know, it could be eventually.
Yeah.
You know, you stick in storm, tree, rain, and then boom.
Story. How many different ways can you write that?
Right. And it's over.
All right. Conway's
all right,
next.
Dig dog.
Dig dog. Dig dog.
There
Mike Brosier is the news.
Let's go.
KOST HD2, Los Angeles, Orange County, live everywhere on the iHeartRadio app.
Open a limited-time 11-month certificate at Kemba Financial Credit Union. At 5.25% APY, it's more than triple the national average, plus it's a safe and secure way to grow your money. Visit your local branch or kemba.org/cd for details. Offer expires May 31st, 2024. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. $500 minimum and $250,000 maximum deposit. Advantage status required. Comparison based on bank rate average. Federally insured by NCUA.
Live Nation presents Concert Week. Now through May 14th, get $25 tickets to over 5,000 shows. That's up to 75% off a summer full of your favorite artists like 21 Savage, Alanis Morissette, Cage the Elephant, Celeste Barber, Dierks Bentley, Fade, Hootie and the Blowfish, Janet Jackson, Kidz Bop Kids, Meghan Trainor, Bissell Pluma, Sarah McLachlan. Get tickets to more than 5,000 summer shows for just $25. Until now through May 14th. Visit LiveNation.com/Concert Week to learn more and plan your summer with Sean Paul, Sum 41, 30 Seconds to Mars, oh, and Two Door Cinema Club.
I'm so excited to tell you JCPenney and country music singer-songwriter Walker Hayes are partnering together on a new limited-time men's collection for the everyday guy. What I love about Walker Hayes is his laid-back nature. He's a family man, and being a country megastar while also having 7 kids, you know he likes to keep his style cool and casual. This new collection is perfect for the guy living the t-shirt life or someone wanting some fresh options that feel just as good. It's easy to wear, affordable styles that celebrate the ultimate family man, along with the quality, durability, and sensibility dads appreciate. Available online Saturday, May 4th at jcp.com and in-store Thursday, May 16th. Just in time for Father's Day. Limited time only. JCPenney, make it count.
With every CBD product claiming to do something different, it's nearly impossible to decide what's best for you. Lazarus Naturals pioneered the farm-to-front-door model of transparency where they handle each step of the production process to ensure quality, potency, and consistency. Scannable labels allow you to see the test results of your hemp batch so you can be confident in the safety and quality. Visit LazarusNaturals.com today. Lazarus Naturals, committed to improving your life as well as the world around you. Not available in Idaho, Iowa, or South Dakota.